In 2025, the normally sleepy world of foreign aid was hit by a big seismic change. It was 1 year ago this month that USAID collapsed under cuts from the incoming administration, which wiped out $75 billion in annual foreign assistance. The United Kingdom quietly also made their own very sizable cuts to their foreign aid budgets. At the same time, philanthropists have been making big commitments. Last year, Bill Gates pledged to give away $200 billion by 2045 to global causes. And Mackenzie Scott gave out $7 billion just last year alone in the U.S. and abroad. GiveDirectly felt these forces. We lost $30 million from our budget when USAID folded in January. And then 6 months later, we received a historic $100 million commitment from the Canva Foundation. And all the while, we were supported by consistent smaller donors like you, which was vital to keeping our work going during all of this chaotic churn. We had to make hard choices, including closing two of our country offices and rethinking our strategy. But the crisis has also created space to reimagine what's possible, building faster crisis response and turning groundbreaking new research into new program designs, charting a concrete path forward to even bigger ambition and work. So we're going to dive into all that in this episode and pull back the curtain to discuss a bit of the behind the scenes of this year's biggest challenges and biggest wins, what we've learned, and what's ahead for 2026. So stay tuned. This is No Strings Attached, and I'm your host, Tyler G. Hall. Today, I'm joined by GiveDirectly's president and CEO, Nick Allardyce, and our VP of product, Sarah Moran. Nick, Sarah, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us, Tyler.
Thanks for having us. Excited to be here.
Well, I'd love to just start with January, when the whole world learned that USAID, the world's largest foreign aid donor, was being shut down. A lot of GiveDirectly supporters probably weren't even aware that USAID was a big donor of GiveDirectly's. It had gone from being somewhat skeptical of our approach to cash to becoming one of our biggest donors, actually. So could you take us back to the start of the year, Nick? What's going through your head when you're hearing this news while also trying to like set a course for us through 2025?
So the overwhelming memory that I have of that moment in time is chaos and uncertainty. No one knew what was happening. And there was just over and over again reports coming out in the media or things that were being leaked to us from within the State Department or USAID about what was happening as the institution was essentially demolished. And our first experience of it was hearing in the media that all foreign aid projects have been frozen for the next 90 days. And that included a set of projects of ours that had dollars that were in process of being sent to folks in some of the most vulnerable countries in the world. These are folks who we had already been in contact with and who are already expecting that money to arrive. And so this was like pretty catastrophic as a first order problem to solve, because when you're living in extreme poverty and having to make really horrific trade-off decisions on a day-to-day basis, having the expectation that a certain amount of support is going to arrive in the coming weeks, and then for that to suddenly disappear, it could be life-threatening, certainly is extraordinarily disruptive. And so our first priority was like, okay, how do we make sure that we meet all of our commitments to people? How do we make sure that people aren't left behind, that the super vulnerable people that we work with, that we meet our commitments to them? So that was our first priority. But I think in general, that time was just an incredibly fast-moving, dynamic situation in which we were learning new information on a day-to-day basis. We were forecast to disperse around $20 million from USAID this year. So having that kind of as a hole knocked in the budget in the space of 24 or 48 hours led us to have to make some, you know, pretty hard decisions under a lot of speed.
Coming out of that moment, there's a sort of a new world. Those who aren't following the foreign aid conversation super closely, a couple of years ago, we were at peak aid, which was, you know, $200 billion a year given in foreign aid or more, not to mention all the charitable donations. And now we're looking at a world where many major countries are cutting back their aid dramatically from that high watermark. As GiveDirectly is looking to change not only the lives of our recipients, but also the aid sector itself, how are you reimagining the future of GiveDirectly at this point? So, you know, what are the sort of programs and approaches that we decided to take coming out of this big seismic shift?
The truth is, a lot of the things that were already very important to GiveDirectly, I think, just become even more important in this new world. One of the reasons that we've always been, I think, very passionate about cash is it's not only uniquely dignified for the people receiving it, it is also uniquely efficient. It doesn't go through 10 layers of middlemen, and it's also incredibly flexible. And I think the infrastructure for global development has to double down on some of those same principles. We've got to be pretty ruthless at making sure that we're kind of allocating money just to the things that have highest impact and kind of best evidence. And I think we've got to be doubling down on things that are like really flexible, that really push the ability to adapt as close to the ground as possible, because I think no one really knows yet what all of the cascading consequences are going to be of all of the aid cuts. And so those were things that were already important for GiveDirectly, and I think it just underscores their importance. And I think in some ways, our commitment to those principles is why, in the face of this kind of contracting global aid environment, we've been able to keep expanding our impact. It does mean that we are focusing far more on scaling through partnerships with people who aren't governments. I don't think that's as clear a pathway as it once was. And I think we're really focused on what are the mechanisms that are actually going to get us to scale without actually relying on the level of institutional and government support that we may have been able to in the past.
Yeah, that's such an important point. And it's really thanks to those, like you said, people who aren't governments. So donors who are individuals, foundations, and also even small donors that like let us be able to find a way to position direct cash as the dust settles from a lot of these things. So that's like a great way that a lot of donors are fitting into what we're doing now. I wanted to go back to something and bring Sarah in on this. You mentioned like a lot of what we're doing is doubling down on building some of the most efficient and adaptable programs that we can. And here at GiveDirectly, we call it that, you know, thinking about our products. So we have these programs that we run and they fit into these different buckets. Sarah, could you give us like an overview of what you think about when you think about that team, that learning engine within GiveDirectly that helps us refine our approach? What's that looked like broadly in 2025?
Yeah, absolutely. So first, the product team at GiveDirectly, our mandate is to convert research and insights into feasible program designs and then leverage technology to enable scale, efficiency, and high quality delivery. So our goal is to actually take what works and be able to do it faster, more repeatably, and more scalably, leveraging tech, and do so in a way that drive really important outcomes for recipients, but also entice donors to give by ensuring that they can see how their philanthropic goals are enabled by the offerings that we have. So we think about this as the intersection of what's really important for recipients, what will really help them achieve their goals, what is fundable by donors, both through persuasion, as well as really looking for solutions for things that people find important, and then things that are actually feasible to do. And so our job is to find the sweet spot in that intersection and double down in those areas.
Let's talk about the flagship GiveDirectly program that we're known for, which is giving about $1,000 to families in extreme poverty. This is our like large lump sum program. What's it look like to sort of refine that or improve it through those technological lenses you're mentioning? What's been going on this year to make our existing program even better?
Great. Yeah. So we've been implementing what we call our large lump sum program, large scale cash transfers for, geez, going on kind of 12, 13 years now. And in the process of implementing that in a range of different countries, we've seen quite a lot of local adaptation of that particular model. So the basics are that we deliver about $1,000 a household to everyone in extremely poor villages. We do that in a couple of steps. We show up, we speak to village leaders about our program. We introduce the program to folks through something we call a baraza, which is a community meeting. We go house to house, enroll them, we pay them, and then we follow up with them. As much as it sounds really simple, what delivering cash can look like is actually lots of different steps. And as you can imagine, that's actually kind of a lot of human power that's needed to do that efficiently and at scale. You were asking about how we can leverage technology. Well, if you can imagine, we've got sort of 5 to 6 human touch points along this spectrum. If we can find ways to engage directly with recipients to find out whether they've successfully received their payments, to help them register for mobile money, then we can actually pretty dramatically reduce the cost of cash delivery. And so we've been looking for ways to consolidate program steps using technology, our call centers, SMS and USSD communication to text messages with recipients as a way to actually allow us to move faster, deliver cash with less expense. And when we get to do that, we can actually reach more people.
That's super interesting. And Nick, I know you're also working a lot with the team on what it looks like to take this program to really big scale, how to make it perhaps even more cost effective by certain measures. Could you tell us a bit about what that work has been like this year?
Yeah, I mean, I think the story of GiveDirectly over time is that the core of delivering cash to people is incredibly powerful. But as we learn, we realize that there are levers that can really amplify the effectiveness of that cash. And so, as Sarah mentioned, we're like, okay, how do we create a learning engine around just doing that repeatedly and then taking that to scale? There's a bunch of different ways that we're thinking about that at the moment, but one of which that I'm really excited about is increasingly understanding cash transfers not as a one-to-one method of helping lift one person out of poverty, but instead seeing it as a community or even region-wide intervention that can lift whole communities at the same time. A huge part of the impact of cash transfers is not in who receives the money and how much money they receive, but actually in how that money then recirculates within the local community. And so there was this big study on one of our programs that basically showed for every dollar that happened in cash transfers, there was $2.50 in economic activity in the local community, and that people who were nearby that village but who didn't receive cash transfers benefited almost as much as the people who received cash themselves. And that's kind of a wild learning, right? And so then that leads us to ask the question, okay, how could we double down on that? How could we actually increasingly treat these cash transfers not as a one-to-one poverty alleviation method, but instead as a local economic stimulus that supports everyone in that community? And so one of the ways that we're doing that this year is there's a really exciting pilot project that is identifying every single business in a community and saying, what are the things that prevent these businesses from growing in response to a growing economy? Often that is access to capital. They need to be able to buy more stock. They need to be able to increase their manufacturing capability or produce more goods or whatever it is. So our hypothesis is that if we actually give some cash directly to those small and medium-sized businesses in advance of cash transfers coming in to the broader community, then the businesses will be more primed to grow in response to the cash transfers that are coming to the broader community. And as a result, we can amplify the overall economic growth that's happening as a result of our intervention. So this is something we're doing in Malawi at the moment. It's a really ambitious, I think, really exciting kind of project. And I think if it works, and I think there's good theory behind why it will work, it has the potential to kind of catalyze and amplify some of the economic effects that we see at a region-wide level. And I think it potentially might even open up a pathway for us to see cash transfers not as a mechanism for lifting individual households out of poverty, but lifting whole villages, potentially even whole regions out of poverty at the same time. And that's just one of our attempts to increase the cost effectiveness of cash, but there's like half a dozen that are just like that.
Yeah. And it takes this form of like, if this can work, this could be a really large moonshot, which was like, if we can find a way to make this more of an economic stimulus that works at scale, then we could really transform like bigger picture ways that development is happening in the poorest parts of the world. And I know there's a similar framework you're bringing now to emergency cash, you know, what we think about as crisis response or disaster relief. People have probably clocked that GiveDirectly responds to some hurricanes, fires, other kinds of crises around the world, and might wonder, oh, how does that fit into this main thing you guys do? So Nick, could you just briefly explain like what's behind that bet and what we might see more of going forward?
Yeah. So if we fast forward to 2030, the majority of the world's extreme poor are going to be in regions that are affected by climate shocks, natural disasters, and conflict. Extreme poverty is not just about deprivation, it's also about a lack of resilience. And for the world to solve extreme poverty, we've got to have a viable solution to supporting people when shocks put them at risk of sliding backwards. And when we step back and look at how does the world do that right now, I think we do a pretty bad job. The humanitarian infrastructure that exists, I think, is like widely acknowledged to be pretty broken. I think the whole humanitarian system kind of repeatedly says we're too inefficient, we're too slow, we're not able to reach the people who need it most. And usually that takes the form of maybe a natural disaster hits somewhere, people are at risk, the most vulnerable, the poorest are the most at risk. And yet it takes months of goods being stuck in ports before you then hand out tarps or water to everyone without regard to whether or not they need it. Sometimes it's food vouchers that people are receiving. They don't actually need food, it turns out. Maybe they need shelter, maybe they need healthcare. And so they're reselling those food vouchers for half the value of what they're actually supposed to be worth. And so this whole system is just like broken in many ways. When we sit back and look at, okay, what are some of GiveDirectly's unique strengths? I think we've got an opportunity to do something that's quite different. We see some of our strengths as being like, okay, one, cash is uniquely efficient. It's uniquely flexible. Cash has a lot of advantages in crisis settings. Not only does it, not only is it fast, not only is it efficient, not only is it flexible, but it also jumpstarts local economies. And so it actually helps with like wider recovery efforts. But beyond that, GiveDirectly's strength in being a technology-first organization allows us to imagine and work on solutions that perhaps aren't otherwise being done. And so what we're working on at the moment is global infrastructure to reach any person affected by crisis within 5 days of that crisis with emergency cash. And this is, it's hard to overstate how ambitious this is. This is a really hard problem to solve. We are talking about reaching some of the hardest to reach people in the world across a patchwork of regulatory environments with very, very different kind of monetary systems, having to navigate all sorts of risks in the way that we do it. But our thesis is that if we can kind of build this infrastructure, not only can we get support to the people who need it most, orders of magnitude faster than what would otherwise happen, but we can also then make that infrastructure something that the broader community of first responders, of nonprofits, of multilateral institutions can leverage in order to reach people more effectively. And so we embarked on building that out last year. As part of that, we're responding to more and more crises to make sure we're learning along the way and kind of taking an iterative approach to the development of that infrastructure. But this is a pretty big moonshot for us. I think it's something that's very motivating for the team at the moment.
Yeah, I think that we have to move fast through this one because it's such a sampler platter of all the things GiveDirectly is doing. But for each of these things that we're building, the podcast is a great way to keep up with like getting a lot deeper on just how you get to that 5 day mark, what we've learned and what we've failed at in some of those early tests. There's a great episode from last month about our emergency response in Jamaica after Hurricane Melissa hit that looks a lot more like what does it actually take to do something quickly. And definitely agree, 5 days is, it can sound, is that short? Is that long? If you think about how long it takes governments to get help to their own citizens after a crisis, you know that takes weeks and months in many countries. So let alone us doing that in any country in the world where we're not even already established, can be some breakthroughs that will really benefit lots of people. So it's such an exciting space to watch. I want to just turn over to Sarah to talk about one more really exciting thing from this year, which is cash's impact specifically on outcomes for moms and babies, newborns. There was a big study in the New York Times from earlier this year about how our programs were found to have reduced child mortality by almost half, which is an enormous drop. It shows just how much preventable death there is in a place like rural Kenya where the study was run. But also the lessons from it have led us to develop another interesting and kind of focused type of program. Sarah, could you just give us a sense of where that work is at and what we're seeing on the ground from the first year of running that?
Yes, definitely. And if folks who are listening haven't already listened to a podcast with my colleagues, Caroline Tetti and Caitlin Tulloch, I strongly, strongly recommend looking back at it from a couple of weeks ago. So as Tyler mentioned, we ran a very, very large scale program in Kenya between 2015 and 2017, where we were treating thousands, tens of thousands of households across an entire region with large transfers. With some support from GiveWell and researchers that we identified, we went deeper to understand whether there were impacts on mortality, especially child and infant mortality in those regions. As Tyler said, what we found were dramatic reductions in infant and child mortality in the areas that we had delivered cash, over half reduction or over 50% reductions in mortality. And you can hear more details about this from that previous podcast, but just to say, we collected tens of thousands of data points around infant mortality from families that were still living in the area. It's much more likely that a baby would survive if money landed in the household when a woman was 8 or 9 months pregnant. The other finding that the researchers saw was that impacts were higher when people were proximate to health centers. So the challenge for us as GiveDirectly was, you're giving us a roadmap to impact here. What we need to figure out is, can we deliver the right amount of cash to expectant moms at the right time to maximize the impact, the positive impact on the mom and the baby's outcomes. So what we decided to do was test, you know, the things you ask when you are trying to develop a new innovation. Can we do it? Does it work the way we expect it to? And then can we repeatedly deliver it? And if we do so, can we actually scale it efficiently? So we're on the first two steps of this journey. 2025 was about figuring out, can we actually feasibly find moms in this very particular moment in time and get them cash? The answer is a resounding yes. We worked with local partners in the DRC and Kenya who serve expectant moms as their key populations. We partnered with them and we delivered cash to, you know, now I think thousands of moms who are, you know, would have received cash transfers in that particular moment in time. What we're now going through is understanding, will we be able to replicate the outcomes we might expect from this project based on the delivery that we've done? And so things we might be looking for. Are moms attending their prenatal care visits? Are they initiating prenatal care early? Those are key drivers of good baby outcomes. Are they delivering their baby at a hospital? Are they going for follow-up visits? How is their nutrition changing after the baby is born? These are things that we think are leading indicators of likely impact, both in the baby's first year of life and then all the way until 5 years. So that is where we kind of are on this project. We call it our mothers and babies work. We're super excited about it. What will be next on the frontier after the next couple of months, we're going to be digging into the data from our pilots, is thinking about, okay, how would we actually do this at scale? What are the partners we would need to put in place? What are some of the technology we might want to put in place? And so that will be kind of what the second half of the year is going to be around.
We're also delivering a lot of cash to pregnant women in Michigan as well right now. Is that because we're seeing similar reductions in mortality and impacts there? Or what does it look like to give cash to moms in the U.S. versus in Kenya?
A lot of the same mechanisms hold, and our hypothesis around what will work for moms in the U.S. is actually quite similar to what will work for moms in Kenya. The relative amount of money we're giving to moms here in Michigan is less, but at the same time, what we have seen, and I don't have the stats in front of me, but we've seen like radically reduced NICU admittances in the regions where we're giving cash, meaning
29% reductions.
Thank you, Nick. Excellent. Good teamwork. So like NICU reductions down by nearly 30%. That is exactly the kind of leading indicator that would give us a sense that the program is working similarly in the U.S. as it is in Kenya. A few other things that are happening, like mom's well-being has improved. They are reporting less depression. There have been fewer evictions. A lot of the same mechanisms hold. And so that's part of what gives us confidence. And in fact, the program we've launched in the U.S. was preceding the one we've done in Kenya, but that's a big reason we have confidence that we'll see similar, if not greater, impacts in places that are even more poor.
So looking back over the whole year, wanted to ask you each for if you could just briefly describe, like, what was your favorite day of work last year? What was the day that had you most excited, geared up about this work, and why?
There was a moment in, I can't remember whether or not it's October or November, when I was sitting down with our CFO and looking at our financial forecast for the year. This is a very nerdy moment, but it was the moment when I realized that we were on track to double the amount of money that we had delivered into people's hands this year. And
double it
that
from last year.
Double it from the year before. That's right. That is, there's no one thing that drove that. This is the accumulation of 1,000 small things that was like, you know, we had done a good job of telling funders like what the opportunities were. We had to navigate some extraordinarily complex circumstances in fragile states where there's like armed conflict and we'd had to shut down countries and we'd done like, it had been a really hard year on many fronts. That moment in time when I was like, yeah, it all adds up into like doubling the amount of money that is actually in people in poverty's hands this year. I just had this moment when I was like staring at this spreadsheet and I sat back in my chair and I was like, holy crap, like it adds up. It really adds up. And it makes me so happy. And it feels like such an honor and privilege to be able to have the type of impact that I know for every $500 that goes into that, more than $145 million that ends up in people's hands, that's like a life changed. And so it's a strange moment sitting with a CFO and staring at a spreadsheet. But it was just in that moment that it hit me, the accumulation of a lot of hard work that was really adding up over the course of the year.
Yeah, it's like an emotional advertisement for Excel right there. But no, that's a beautiful moment. That's exciting. Sarah, how about for you?
I think Nick's answer kind of jiggered something for me. when I first joined GiveDirectly, I was our U.S. country director. So I was responsible for all of our programming in the United States. And I still remember the first dollar that got delivered to a recipient on my watch. It was May 25th, 2022, in case anyone's curious. And so I think mine for this year, it relates to that. It's the first dollar we delivered to someone who had been impacted by typhoons in the Philippines. It was not a front page crisis. It was not necessarily one that had made national news, but it was the first time that as a new emergency cash team, we had launched in less than a couple of days an end-to-end project that then enabled us to pay people. I think, you know, it still took us maybe 2 to 3 weeks to actually get our first payments out. But it was the first time we'd actually executed against this moonshot. And even on that first attempt, we were delivering cash 5-6 times faster than we ever had before, and in a place we had never operated before. So it was a little bit of a forgotten crisis on the world stage, but for us, it was a perfect proof point for what we thought we might be able to do. And I think for the team, it really validated the moonshot of this global less than 5-day response, which is a very easy thing to wave off. But I think if you're within GiveDirectly, you realize people are taking it very seriously. And this Philippines response was the first time that we actually saw the possibility.
Great. And for those who gave, you know, at the end of this year, maybe even some after giving for the first time this year, they're maybe wondering, what are you going to do with my money? And in that spirit, I'm wondering, what's one thing you're the most jazzed about for next year for GiveDirectly? Can be a program or effort or just something that you know we'll be attempting in this coming year that will be putting those funds to work.
You know, something we haven't talked about that much on this podcast, but has taken up quite a lot of bandwidth in the product team is after, again, 12, 13 years of delivering cash and $1 billion delivered, we have embarked on a grand journey to rebuild our core cash delivery technology. And that was something that we decided to do last year, following on from the uncertainty of the USAID closures, but recognizing that this was a year we needed to actually invest in foundations to enable future scale. So we have started building the, you know, if you think about it as we've got this old rickety bridge over the East River, cars, thousands of cars drive over it every day. Hundreds of thousands of people rely on it every day. And we're sort of telling folks, hey, that bridge is great, but it's not going to last forever. We need to build a new one. That's not a small undertaking. And so at some point this year, the first car will drive over that new bridge and we will be delivering cash through our new platform, which I think represents a pretty tremendous opportunity for us to scale and deliver more effectively, more quickly than we ever have before. And so that's kind of a major sort of well below the hood, you know, technology, innovation, and sort of strengthening that we're doing this year. But I am pretty excited about that. Again, it's kind of a nerdy answer. But I am excited that at some point this year, we will be delivering dollars through our new platform. And what that means for us as an organization is that the next $1 billion we deliver, we will be able to do a lot easier and a lot faster and a lot more efficiently than the first billion.
Great. Nick?
I mean, honestly, there's so many things that I'm excited about in this coming year. I'm excited for our emergency cash work to mature and to just keep getting faster. I'm excited for the increasing levels of scale where we're working at whole region-wide economic stimulus in Malawi and so on. But something we haven't talked about that I'm particularly excited for is layering on really light touch financial planning and coaching for recipients in our core programs. Now, if you look at the literature, like a lot of the academic research that has been done on effectively helping people graduate from extreme poverty and kind of have sustained long-term impacts, there's pretty good evidence that some really light touch, or some maybe sometimes it's heavy touch, but some level of financial planning coaching can be quite an effective intervention for compounding the value of an asset transfer or a cash transfer. We already know that cash has really good long-term effects on people's lives, but the evidence around the potential to amplify this with some really light touch coaching, I think is like quite compelling. The barrier to this is not whether or not it works. There's like plenty of RCTs and trials that have established that it works. The barrier is the combination of scalability, cost, and quality control. Most of the evidence that has been generated for the effectiveness of this intervention has been using mechanisms that can end up being quite expensive and hard to do quality control for at scale. And so we're really taking this and saying, okay, can we create a way of seamlessly layering this on top of our cash transfers as a way of significantly amplifying the effectiveness of them? And that's something we're going to be taking a real run at this year. It's something that we've done in kind of ad hoc ways in different kind of versions of our programs, but we're really going to be coming up with like the GiveDirectly way of doing it in a repeatable, scalable way. And I'm really excited for the potential there.
Nice. I feel like a thing that's coming through a lot in both of those examples in this conversation is like little tweaks, giant gains, which is like things that you can be doing to these programs that could make people's donations do so much more good, or make it so that the next $1 billion of donations are delivered even more efficiently and more effectively. And yeah, those kinds of nudges and stuff are, or even the tech platforms are just little ways that if you tweak the way you're delivering $150 million a year, it has a huge impact. So I want to end with this question, which is we're talking about a lot of new things we're testing, ways we're augmenting what we're doing, new things we're trying. At its core, most of the money that we deliver is still through this classic large cash transfer project that people are familiar with. Wondering, as we keep growing and have this ambition, what's just one thing in each of your minds that you're making sure we avoid? A pitfall, a misdirection, something that would make GiveDirectly not GiveDirectly down the road if we made that choice today, so that we can do all this innovation without kind of losing who we really are? Yeah, what's one of those main questions you ask yourself?
There are two things that I'm really conscious of here. The first is we will never be done. There will never be an answer. I think we have to be really careful as an organization to kind of assume that we find the right answer and then we're just in the process of scaling that up. I think what makes GiveDirectly unique has been this like relentless thirst to always be better. Always be better in the effectiveness and impact that we can drive, always be better in the way that we work and our operations and our efficiency. And so I think as we scale and do things at increasing levels of scale, I think we're going to be really, really conscious about making sure that we take this learning first orientation into everything that we do and make sure that every dollar has double impact. It transforms someone's life now and it unlocks learnings to transform more people's lives in the future. And so that's the first. And then the second that I would say, like, we're going to grow this year. I expect that GiveDirectly will grow substantially in the number of, in the dollars that we deliver and in the number of people that we reach. And so many organizations, as they grow, the common traps that you fall into are bureaucracy, bloat, inefficiency, overextension. And we're going to work really hard to make sure that as we grow, we get even more high leverage in the way that we deliver cash, such that more dollars are reaching people on the ground, such that we're staying really lean as an organization. GiveDirectly runs really lean. Everyone goes above and beyond, and we're going to hold on to that.
I think my answer goes back to something Nick was getting at earlier in the conversation. You know, cash has infinite impacts on people's lives. And it is really, really difficult for us to think about the relative value of optimizing for a particular outcome against the sort of infinite magnitude of impact that cash can have just because it's cash, and that we really want to make sure we are centering the agency of the people who are getting the cash in our programs. And at the same time, we know that if we direct cash in particular ways, we can generate extremely cost-effective solutions for big global problems like child mortality. So I think what I want to hold on to this year, and it relates to our large transfer program, but it ultimately relates to all of our sort of product development, is thinking about, I guess, on the one hand, doing fewer things really well, like really thinking about the 80-20 when we are adapting and learning, getting to that kind of optimal curve where the changes and iterations we're making on programs, to Nick's point, we never want to stop learning, but we also don't want to spend so much time optimizing something that's working well that we don't put enough effort into the next moonshot. And so that for me has been like the theme of this year, looking ahead, like how do we retain focus? How do we make sure we're delivering with extremely high quality while also realizing that there are going to be a lot of calls to our attention, a lot of ideas that people, donors, recipients, our staff bring to us about what might work. and staying laser focused on the things that are going to be actually the most effective and the most needed in the world. So that's, I think, the big tension I've been thinking about. And I think the pitfall there is trying to be everything to everyone all the time.
Well, Godspeed with all those trade-offs. That is our show. So I want to thank you both for joining the conversation. And to everyone who listened, please go check out our end of year report, which has a lot more detail about a lot of the programs we ran this year. That's at givedirectly.org/2025report. You can watch some amazing videos and dig into some of the data we discussed today. This has been No Strings Attached, a podcast produced by Mary Blair and hosted by me, Tyler G. Hall.